Back in 2008, I was just finishing up my last year of theological studies, and coming to the end of many years of tough living, in great kindness, one of my family members took us on holiday, and they put us up at an eye-wateringly expensive beachfront villa. And you cannot imagine how good that felt after years of living on the smell of an oily rag as a student, with my first two born as I was a full-time student. What that was like to have that kind of holiday set before us, tremendously luxurious and enjoyable. But the holiday got even better. You know, I just finished my study, great holiday before me. Second day that we were there on holiday, I get a phone call. And I get a phone call from a church in the South Island who had said that they are calling me to be their pastor. And so we celebrated. We gave thanks to the Lord, and we walked on that beach with thankful hearts for God's leading and provision in our lives. It was a euphoric moment. It was one of those moments that you see in a movie, you know, that moment that you just wish could go on and on. A moment that you wish you didn't have to leave behind for the ordinary cares of life with its ups and downs. Do you know what that kind of moment feels like? Do you recall any moment in your life where everything was just awesome? Abraham experienced such a moment too. One such moment was the birth of his son Isaac. Though Abraham and his wife had long been regarded as being over the hill, far too old to be having children. And we read about this in the first few verses of this chapter. To give you some context, it had been about 25 years since God first made Abraham and Sarah this promise of a child. And a promise which God later repeated to them, saying, you will have this child. And he gives them that promise again to strengthen their faith. And then in accordance with God's promise, Sarah and Abraham had this child, and it was a boy, and they named him Isaac. And so this euphoric moment for Abraham and Sarah was the birth of their very own child, the child that they had maybe long given up hope that they would have. And so the passage makes the point, this is not just the natural joy which any new mum or dad feels when their baby is born. It was an upsized, a supersized joy for Abraham and Sarah, because they knew this child was there because God made a promise. The fact that the child is there was for them evidence that God was at work in their lives, that God was leading and providing for them. We see that in the verses 1 and 2, where we just note that over and over and over, this is accredited and attributed to God. The Lord visited Sarah as he had said. The Lord did to Sarah as he had promised. And Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son at the time of which God had spoken to them. So Abraham and Sarah knew this moment, not just as a simple natural joy of new parenting, but the joy that arises when you know God has been at work in your life and his blessing and his provision and his leading is abundantly evident to see. As we think about this, I can imagine that being the kind of moment Abraham and Sarah wished could go on forever and ever. That euphoric moment of joy that you wish you didn't have to surrender to the ordinary cares of life. That climactic feel-good scene in the movie that you just want to see again and again and again. The trouble is, no one, not even the characters in the Bible, live their entire lives in these euphoric moments. None of us do. You know this, and I know this. Even as I think back about that holiday of 2008 and the thankfulness which I expressed to the Lord in my heart, as I returned from my walk on the beach, I still had to return to a living room of awkward conversation making with a father that does not share my faith nor shows any interest in my calling as a pastor. Even our best moments are surrendered to the ordinariness of life with all its ups and downs. So what I'm getting at is this. Even our best moments with God, the ones we experience and enjoy His evident blessing and leading and provision, ordinary life with all its troubles still come knocking at our doors and require our attention. The joy of experiencing God's blessing, His leading and provision, does not grant us immunity or isolation from a life with usual ups and downs. Abraham came to know this, as did Sarah. For all their joy and knowing and experiencing God's unquestionable blessing upon their lives, right? Isaac born according to promise, the joy making that goes into that, ordinary troubles were still part of their lives. Ordinary troubles would still come knocking at their door. And we note this at least twice in this chapter. The first trouble of ordinary life is seen in this tense relationship between Sarah and Hagar. For those of you who may not know, Hagar was a surrogate mum to Abraham's firstborn child, Ishmael. But when Sarah, Abraham's wife, had this child, Isaac, the tension between the surrogate and Sarah got to breaking point. It just bubbled over. And we read about this in verses 8 through to 10, that Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. But Sarah saw the son of Hagar laughing. So she said to Abraham, "Cast out the slave woman with her son, for the son of this slave woman shall not be heir with my son, Isaac." And that's a tough relationship. That is sour. That's what that is. Evidently, Sarah was extraordinarily salty toward the surrogate side of the family and demanded their exile. Send them away. And it reminds us that even the best moments of unquestionable blessing from God does not insulate us from experiencing these ordinary troubles of life. Relationship breakdowns, right? Tensity with people. The second indication we have of ordinary troubles asserting themselves is when Abraham and Abimelech, of whom we heard last week, right, settled a peaceful alliance. And no sooner had the ink dried on that alliance, and Abraham accuses Abimelech of letting his people steal a precious water source. Verses 23 to 25, Abimelech is speaking and he says, "As I have dealt kindly with you, Abraham, so you will deal with me and with the land where you have sojourned." And Abraham said, "I will swear." And then notice the very next thing that Abraham does is this. He reproves Abimelech about a well of water that Abimelech's servants had seized. "I just signed a peace treaty with you, made an alliance. Oh, and by the way, your people are a bunch of thieves." It's just this ordinary pressures of life, right? When your neighbors are being a bunch of jerks. Just because you've experienced the profound blessing of God upon your life doesn't mean that they'll stop. You still have to deal with that relationship. You still have to navigate that somehow. This is what real life is like, isn't it? Our best moments, though we wish we could hold on to them, though we wish we could remain in the moment forever and ever and ever, we are reminded that those glorious moments which we treasure actually happen and take place in an ordinary life, with all the usual troubles, ups and downs that it brings. Euphoric moments do not give us immunity or insulate us from an ordinary life of troubles, though we wish it did. I'm reminded of famous words penned by Charles Dickens. This is the first verse, the first line of this might sound familiar to you. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. You heard that? It's the best of times, it was the worst of times. It was an age of wisdom, it was an age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief, it was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light, it was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope, it was the winter of despair. And he goes on and on with his contrasting realities of life. Look, I am no scholar of Dickens, I'm the first to admit that, and nor do I know a great deal about the French Revolution of which he wrote. But can we at least say that Mr. Dickens was attuned to this fact of life, that the best of times and the worst of times coexist in our human experience? To say it another way, the best of times gives no immunity or insulation from the worst of times. But even though these two experiences mingle together in our lives, we need not become short-sighted regarding the blessing of God upon our lives. Here's what I mean. When things are going great in your life, it's easy to point and say, I know what it's like to receive and experience the blessing of the Lord upon my life. When things go well with you, it's easy to say, I know what it's like to have the blessing of the Lord. It's when things get tough that we become short-sighted about this blessing of the Lord. It's when we become forgetful and we lack our ability to perceive God's good purposes for us. We begin to think that God has abandoned us, or that his plans are unraveling because we're going through a tough time. The psalmist, which I quoted as our call to worship this morning, he knew this. Psalm 42, he writes for us. He remembers this pleasure of enjoying God's blessing, and he says, out of this great remembrance of pleasure and the blessing of God, I lead them in worship to the house of God with glad shouts and songs of praise. It's remembering what it's like to live in that euphoric moment of blessing. And then he goes on, not too long after saying those words, and he considers the troubles that have pressed in on his life, and he thinks about those troubles, and he says, Why do I go mourning because of the oppression of my enemies? Mourning because of the oppression of my enemies. The troubles of life has this effect on us. They make us short-sighted to the blessing of God on our lives. To help us through these moments, we are given no silver bullet no stiff upper lip, harden up, concrete pill to swallow in our sorrow. We are, however, given the careful work of looking for and detecting God's blessing, which remains in spite of our troubles. There is no magic bullet. There is only the careful work of looking for and detecting God's blessing, which remains in spite of our troubles. Let's do this with our passage. Let's look and detect God's blessing, which remains. Even though Sarah and Hagar had this massive relationship bust up, right? Where Sarah's like, exile, send her away with a bit of bread and some water. I don't care what happens to her, just get her out of here. That massive bust up, right? And no doubt that kind of soured the joy that she had about the birth of Isaac. But God still threads that ordinary trouble which she experienced with his blessing. Note this in verse 12. God said to Abraham, Be not displeased because of the boy and because of your slave woman. If the word slave woman there troubles you and you wonder about slaves in the Bible, please, I'd love to talk with you about that afterwards. Be not displeased because of the boy and because of your slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you, do as she tells you, for through Isaac your offspring shall be named. The important phrase here is, through Isaac shall your offspring be named. It's God's reminder to Abraham that in spite of the tragedy of sending Hagar and Ishmael away into a desert place, the blessing of a son, which Abraham and Sarah so keenly sought, celebrated and enjoyed, remains. The blessing remains, even though the trouble is all around. The blessing of God can still be found among the troubles of life. And again, even though Abraham had this bust up with Abimelech, right, accusing his people of being a bunch of thieves, God did not abandon Abraham at that point. Just because life is difficult doesn't mean that God has left the building. He need not be short-sighted about God's provision in his life this way. Abraham shows us that even when ordinary troubles of relationships and relationship breakdown happens, we can, like Abraham, still call on the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. That's what he did, right? Him and Abimelech have a bit of difficulty, but Abraham's still able to detect and find the blessing of God in his life. The fact that he can still call upon the name of the Lord shows us that. Our love for God need not come to a crashing halt just because ordinary moments of trouble has invaded our lives. The thread of God's blessing towards us can still be found in that life and in those circumstances of life. Look for them. Hold on to those blessings. The Lord remains faithful even though our circumstances change. Let me try and bring this to a close. Let me try and land this thing. My thesis this morning has simply been this. Even our best moments of joyful blessing from God, by which we experience his leading and provision, does not grant us immunity or insulation from an ordinary life of ups and downs. And I hope I've done a reasonable job of showing you that from the passage itself. But to show you how this applies to us in a more tangible way, I want to tell you a story. I want to share with you just one short story of someone who knew the evident blessing of God in their lives, and yet they faced terrible troubles in amongst that blessing. Some of you may know this story. It's the story of Rachel Barkey. Her blessing, she's a young mum, and she knew her blessing is that she was a believer in Jesus. She adored Jesus, loved Jesus, trusted Jesus. She knew that she was forgiven, that God loves her and would lavish his gospel promises on her in the age to come. Her trouble is at the age of 33, young mum, she gets diagnosed with terminal cancer. Rachel knew that believing in Jesus does not mean immunity from those troubles of life. It did not mean that she would be immune from cancer just because she believed Jesus. And so, recognizing that, she penned these words and reflections as she wrestled through that, right? As we all would. And she writes these words and reflections. She says, "Cancer does not define me. Neither does being a wife or a mother. All those things are part of who I am, but they do not define me. What defines me is my relationship with Jesus." This mum looked for and detected the thread of God's blessing in her life in the midst of trouble. And that thread that she found is Jesus himself. That was evidence of God's blessing upon her life. And Jesus would prove enough a blessing to see her through her death at the age of 37. That's the story of Rachel Barkey. Death is not dying. You can look that up online for her full testimony. Listen, I close with that this morning.